Welcome, everybody, to our next Paper of the Month podcast. I'm going to talk much more slowly than the last podcast. That's going to be very welcome to many people, I'm told. Silky Gillison is with me today. Brian's obviously with me too.
thanks for noticing.
Yeah, but Silky, you've got a couple of papers in JCO in testis cancer. We haven't had a testis cancer paper of the month yet, so congratulations on that. Do you want to talk a bit about the collaboration just for a second and introduce yourself, just talk about the collaboration and then maybe start with the seminoma paper because I think it's easier.
Okay, yes. So, hello, I'm Silky Gillison. I'm a medical...
You're one of our Your Amigos, of course, Silky.
Oh, yes,
so
of
you're
course,
well,
of
yeah,
course.
So, yeah, so,
yeah,
you
course.
Know,
so
you
everyone
need no introduction
anyway.
In this.
Yes.
I apologize for interrupting, by the way.
That's okay. I'm used to that. So first of all, you should say that today is Tom's birthday.
No, no, yes. Please don't do that. Oh, please
so
don't
we
do that.
Wanted
oh.
to sing, but we don't.
We should do the happy birthday music as the intro to this podcast.
Maybe.
Yes,
that's very...
We
so
should
it's very,
do it.
It's very sweet of you, Sophie. It's very sweet of you.
So you see how really passionate he is about Our Amigos podcast, that he's even doing them for his birthday gift or something.
Alternatively, I don't like birthdays very much, but that's the alternative explanation.
Okay, so the papers, I think, so thank you very much for that opportunity. They're actually a really big team effort, and I think this is important to mention that this was not only me, that was Jörg Bayer, the statisticians like Laurence Collette and also Nicolas Sauvé from the EOTC, and a lot of friends who are treating testis cancer. I think this is very important to start with. And the idea is that was actually from that. And I think we talked about that, Tom, like, I don't know, a long time ago, like seven years ago. Right?
Yeah, we went for a walk in San Francisco, as I remember.
Yeah, with Asko Giu.
Back in the day.
And we saw that the IGCC classification that is used all over the world in trials, but also in practice, like, should be updated because this was published in 1997, so more than 20 years ago. And then we decided that this would be a good project to bring into the testis community. And we found 30 groups and cooperative groups and investigators who wanted to help and trials. So that's what we did.
It's fair to say that in germ cell tumours, in advanced disease, when we give chemotherapy, we use this IGCCC classification and we stratify patients for treatment according to that risk. And at the moment, they get either 3 or 4 cycles of BEP. Is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct, as you know. Yeah, so we do have good and intermediate prognosis for the seminoma patients,
yeah,
and good intermediate and poor prognosis for the non-seminoma.
And so you updated this on our most recent data set, out of the huge data set. And what were the main 2 or 3 findings in the seminoma group?
So let's maybe start with the goals, right? So the goal number one was that we wanted to validate the original IGC criteria and update the survival rates in our modern cohort now. And the second goal was to identify, and that was for seminoma and non-seminoma, both of the goals, new prognostic factors that could explain the heterogeneity that we see in the outcomes in the original IGCC risk groups. So I may start with the common things. So what we saw in both in the non-seminoma and in the seminoma data, that the original classification still holds true. And I think this is really, really good. So that was really good work these 20 years ago, you know. So that is still holding up. And then,
so can I interrupt for 1 second? So I have a question.
Sure.
So the first publication was 600-some patients, 660 or something?
So this was the seminoma. So the first IGC update was in 660 seminoma patients.
Right.
And in 5,200 non-seminoma patients.
Okay. And so your effort in seminoma was many times over that.
Exactly. So we have now more than 2,400 seminoma patients plus a validation set of another 700. So it's much more seminoma patients than in the original one. And we have also about double in the non-seminoma patients. Yeah. So the data bank is much bigger than the original one.
So exactly. Fairly remarkable that the original smaller series held up, I think.
Yes. Yes, that was really amazing, you know. And what we saw then in the seminoma, because I have the feeling that Tom wants to right now to start about speaking only for the seminoma.
Who cares what Tom wants?
Yeah.
So, okay. I apologize for Brian's interruption, by the way, Cynthia. I apologize.
It's all good. So the seminoma really went, I mean, so the progression, 5-year progression free survival went up from 82 to 89% in the good ones, and the overall survival from 86 to 95%. So it looks that it's better, but we have to say that the original group was really small, as we said, right?
Mm-hmm. And Silky, as it currently stands, what factors are in the IGCCC classification?
So for the seminoma, we have actually only the intermediate is the patients that have non-pulmonary visceral metastasis and nothing else. So that is then the definition of intermediate for seminoma.
So it's essentially one factor.
One factor in the seminoma. Yeah. So the markers, even if some people still have done it, the markers weren't included for the seminoma patient in the classification, but just that one factor. And we saw that the progression-free survival and the overall survival in our modern series is much improved. So that's very nice in the seminoma patients. Yeah. And we found within the good prognosis group, a group that was less good, and that's the patients with an LDH that is more than 2.5 times upper limit of the normal. So there is a heterogeneity in that good prognosis group that is defined by LDH.
So non-visceral metastasis.
Right.
And then LDH, yes or no. And that's two groups. And then the worst group is visceral metastasis. Is that right?
Interestingly, but we have to say, even in our now much bigger group, we don't have a lot of intermediate risk patients. So the patients that were in the old classification, the intermediate risk with the non-pulmonary visceral mets. So this is really a small group, but it actually looks like this group is not so different from the patients in the original good prognosis group that have the high LDH.
So, Silky, I think the question then is, do you think the high LDH good prognosis patients need more intense treatment like the intermediate risk patients?
So that's a very good question, Brian.
That is a good question, Brian. No, I thought that was a good question too, actually.
No. Yeah. So, Brian, this is probably the most critical question ever. We have to say, we can't say that because that was a retrospective analysis. Sure. So we need now, like it has been happening after the first original IGCCC, we now need the trials to test that. But I have to say, it's interesting that already some of the investigators, and as you know, they are all very kind of experienced doctors, already do it. So they give.
Would you do it, Silky? Would you give four cycles with high LDH?
I think it's too early. I think we really need these trials to do these trials.
If a patient asked you for four cycles, they said, "I've read the paper. I want four cycles." Would you give them four cycles?
Yeah, I guess it's reasonable. I would start and then see how he tolerates the first three one, right? And then I think we could talk about it. Just I think what is important, and we said it really clearly also in the paper, it's not a paper that should change treatment, but I guess it really helps you to say or explain the patients the prognosis. And then we even don't know if four cycles of BEP are then really the right thing in this population, or maybe it would even need something else, right? So probably we need a dose intensification, but which one we don't know from the data we have.
Do you think that trial will be done? I mean, are there active plans?
There is actually plans, and I come to that with the non-seminoma, to go in the really poor prognosis patients in general and try to escalate treatment. I think the other point is obviously, can we, like in the our lymphoma colleagues, de-escalate treatment in the really good ones? And I guess that could be the other way to go, right? You go to the really good ones and say, do they really need three cycles of BEP? And go there. So there are already some trials ongoing, as you know, probably the French one that uses a PET and then gives less treatment if the PET was negative, or just go really in the in these really good prognosis patients.
Silky, what are we? Is there anything else we need to say about the seminoma group before we move on to non-seminoma?
No, I think that was the most important thing. The non-seminoma is clearly much more data and maybe also kind of new prognostic factors because mm-hmm. there were much more patient data. And
so, Silky, in the non-seminoma group, you have good, intermediate, and poorest patients. And in here, in the original IGCCC classification, the tumor markers are relevant. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. And also, obviously, that stayed the same. And interestingly, in the non-seminoma, for the good and intermediate prognosis patients, now in our modern cohort, the progression-free survival was very similar to the old cohort, whereas the overall survival was much improved. And for
in the poor risk?
No. In the good, intermediate, and poor risk, the OS yes. was significantly improved
in everybody.
All okay. the three groups. The progression-free yeah. survival was only significantly improved in the poor prognosis patients. So I think you know that's something interesting to understand.
What do you think accounts for that, both in seminoma and non-sem? I mean, because are the drugs significantly different? Is it just more in, you know, people are getting more intense therapy or appropriately intense therapy, or why do you think there's a difference?
Yeah, so this is very interesting. So first of all, in the original, not everyone had etoposide and cisplatin, what is now the normal backbone. Okay. Then we have mm-hmm. better staging. So we have probably a stage migration, right? We have better diagnostic methods. We have centralization sure. that hasn't been done like 20 years ago, especially, for example, in the UK, the treatment is centralized. We probably, like especially mm-hmm. for the non-seminoma, do better post-chemotherapy surgery. So I guess there's a lot of these factors, maybe one, maybe all of them together. But I guess it's interesting that in the non-seminoma, it seems that that what is really improved is the first-line treatment for poor prognosis and the salvage treatments.
And so talk us through the non-sem findings. You mentioned some new prognostic factors. What did you guys find?
Yeah, so interestingly, and I think that was a bit astonishing for all of us, the age was an important prognostic factor. Yeah. So with every decade of life increase, we found an about 25% increase in risk of progression. So in reality, we didn't expect that. I don't know, Tom, if you would have expected that.
I looked at the paper when
since
when I read
it's
it,
your
I
birthday today. We don't. Yeah. And we don't know which one. Yeah. But
speaking as you of can age. See, I'm not having a terrific birthday. As you can see. so I was surprised because I thought maybe it was to do with the ability to for older patients to receive dose intensified therapy, and maybe the dose intensification of increased age was reduced. But you, the paper, you said that was not the case.
So the only thing that we could say is, so the planned treatment didn't seem to be different from, you know, from an older to a younger patient. Also, the mortality, treatment-related mortality didn't seem to be increased. I guess what we didn't collect and what could have been is that you do more dose reductions, delay of chemos, and I think it's a really important point that we shouldn't do that. And that we should do everything to counteract delaying of therapies, especially in older patients, obviously. But we don't know.
So you did there. You didn't have data. You didn't have data on dose reductions or delays.
So,
okay. So it's possible.
So the planned intensity was the same, but the delivered intensity we don't know.
So I mean, we don't know why age is so important, but I guess that could be a possible explanation.
So in the new model, Silky, you also showed that non-pulmonary visceral metastasis was relevant. You've also showed some of the histological subtypes are relevant, mediastinal, for example. You've showed, again,
that's not
the tumor markers.
Histology, if I may say. That's just the location.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I apologize. And you've gone on and you've gone on and shown the tumor markers are also different. Have you used different cut points for the tumor markers, or are they still the same?
So all the points that you have now set, like the location of the primary, the non-visceral mets, visceral mets, were already in the original classification. The new thing we found, or the other new thing apart from the age, was presence of lung metastasis. Since until now, we always used the, you know, non-pulmonary visceral metastasis as mm-hmm. a prognosticator. Now we found that also the presence of lung metastasis gives you an increase of about 60% in risk of progression. So this is important as well. And that's new. The tumor markers, we didn't change anything except with the LDH, where, if you remember, in the old classification, there were three kind of cutoffs. One was 1.5 and the other was more than 10 upper limit of normal of LDH. And mm-hmm. we didn't see a lot of patients with more than 10 times upper limit of normal of the LDH. So we choose one cut point at 2.5 that seems, for me at least, clinically much more relevant than 1.5.
So, Silky, let's say you've got a patient now with metastatic germ cell tumor. You're seeing them in clinic for the first time. Mm-hmm. You're going to give them treatment. They're fit for treatment. They want treatment. Which classification are you going to use? And how are you going to define what treatment they're going to get?
So again, also for the non-seminoma, unfortunately, yes. We can't change treatment recommendations based on our analysis because it was really not done for that. So the only thing that we can do now is, again, we have a new calculator. I don't know if you've seen it. So there is a link in the paper.
I have seen it. I had a go as well on my birthday.
So I think this is really useful. So you have now, like in other diseases, you have a calculator where you can put everything in, the age, the presence of lung metastasis, and so on, and all the tumor markers. By the way, what was really interesting is that the tumor markers, so the elevated tumor markers, are especially important for the patients without the non-pulmonary visceral metastasis. As soon as you have this non-pulmonary visceral metastasis, the tumor markers are still relevant, but much less so. I think you see it if you play around with the calculator.
Yeah, I think you immediately get sort of 250 points if you've got non-pulmonary visceral metastasis. You can't be anything
but
porous.
It's really kind of interesting. So that, because that was always something we saw, that it's very important to have the tumor markers as high in the new prognosticator. This loses a bit of importance when you have these non-pulmonary visceral mets.
So, Silky, same question as seminoma. You said you can't change treatment recommendations yet, but are some of the ongoing trials, and I know, Tom, you're involved with some of them, are they accounting for this, or what's the next step forward?
Brian, you, as always, you're super fast. It just came out some days ago.
Did you hear that,
super
Tom?
Super fast. So, you know, that this just came out 2 days ago. So, yeah.
That was luck.
So now Rob Hoddard from the UK is planning a new trial in really high-risk patients. So he would hopefully use that prognosticator and then use, like, kind of do really trials with those escalation, as we said, in these really, really high risk. Because I think we still a third of the patients die that are in the poor prognosis group, also in the modern series. So we need to have better treatments for these patients. And I guess this is something where we want to use this calculator to really choose the correct patients for those escalation.
That sounds cool. What are the shortcomings of the work, Silky? There's obviously, with everything that we do, there are problems. So what are the challenges associated with these couple of publications?
Yeah, the biggest challenge is that what you always ask me already, right? So we can't just change practice based on these new prognosticators. We need first to do the clinical trials And that's, as we all know, difficult because there is no pharmaceutical company interested in testicular cancer because this is all drugs normally we use. And that's obviously one of the shortcomings of the work.
How does it help patients?
I think what it really helps, you can now look at with the patient really at the prognosticator and be much more granular. And the other thing is, you know, that you can tell him now, you know, you have an OS of that and that, and it's much better than it was when you used the old data. So I think this is already something that is positive to give to the patient.
Yeah, I mean, I think that when we set this project up, and I remember talking to people about, there was a lot of uncertainty about whether we were going in the right direction with these this classification system. And I think that this data shows that classification system actually has worked really well, and that is really important in its own right, because, you know, to some extent, we were using data from the 1980s, and we couldn't have gone on treating patients indefinitely in the same way because treatment has evolved. And so I think it's reassuring that survival's improved, but the original factors remain the same. So I actually think that's extremely important. It would have been super interesting had you shown that there was a new prognostic, but then you'd say, well, why would that be the case? Because we're using the same treatment, the same disease. So, you know, so I think it's really important that you validated that work, and I think that's a really important finding. Brian, a couple of questions from you, I guess.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, this is a great effort. I think these large international, you know, data-heavy efforts and statistical efforts are not easy, right? Yeah. I mean, I think Asoka can attest to, you know, and as you say, Tom, it provides granularity, provides better prognostic information, and hopefully can then be used to build on a intensification or de-intensification as, you know, as appropriate. So mostly just congrats on the effort.
Thanks. And I really have to give that to everyone, because everyone did that for free. So all the data was just provided. We got some money from Movember, from Swiss Cancer Foundation. We gave some of our money, Jörg and I, because we really wanted this to work for the statistical fellow that we had in EOTC. But it's just always very nice to see that all our friends and collaborators in testicular cancer are so motivated. And the other...
I thought it was great. I thought it was great you had so many authors on the paper. I think it was 35 yes. authors on one of the paper. I thought it was really inclusive.
And maybe one last thing that is important. So now this is a fantastic data source, right? So anyone who has some idea, that should be open. Anyone who has some ideas, obviously we need to ask everyone who has contributed, but can contact me, can contact Jörg, can contact anyone. And I think that we should make best use of that data that we have now collected, with some effort. Yeah.
Suki, that's super. Thank you so much for your great work and presenting it with us today. Brian, thank you as always. Yeah.
Tom, thanks for getting a year older. We really appreciate it.
Oh, I can't believe it. I can't believe it.
I'll see you soon.
All right, see you guys.
See you soon. Bye-bye.